So welcome. Last week we finished book one in the Life Divine, Omnipresent Reality and the Universe. And it was a large metaphysical statement, those first 300 pages. Sri Aurobindo described a reality that is transcendent and yet deeply and fully invested and immersed in a universe which is an expression of its being, not a denial of its integrity and of its initiating auspiciousness. This reality is central to us also. We are the individual universe moving in a larger universe, all of it describing, depicting in singular symbolic form what is ever infinite. And in what seems to be unconscious, there is a consciousness. In what seems to be insentient, there is the play of delight, the presence of bliss, and always and everywhere is that sacred, undivided reality, Sat. Sat Chit Ananda has manifested this universe through the seeing of its own divine consciousness, which we call the supermind. We have seen that the order of the worlds that Sri Aurobindo has depicted is sevenfold in nature. Sat Chit Ananda, the linking, transmitting consciousness of the supermind, as the key bridge by which that infinite descends through mind into life and involving itself ultimately in matter. And that the principle of bliss, of delight, moves through each soul as it evolves back towards that divine station above, but claiming all that is here with it as it goes. So this is the basis of Sri Aurobindo's vision. But in book two, which he calls The Knowledge and the Ignorance, the Spiritual Evolution, he will grapple with the largest questions, metaphysical and psychological and philosophical, which perplex the human mind as it tries to understand how that infinite becomes finite, how that consciousness loses itself in nescience, how that bliss lapses into insentience. The first part, part one of book two, he calls the infinite consciousness and the ignorance. So, let us play. Chapter 1. Indeterminates, Cosmic Determinations, and the Indeterminable. As always, he has a number of citations from Vedantic texts with which he begins his essay. The unseen Adrishta, with whom there can be no pragmatic relations, Avyavaharya, unseizable, featureless, unthinkable, undesignable by name, whose substance is the certitude of one self, in whom world existence is stilled, who is all peace, Shanta, and bliss, Shiva. That is the self. That is what must be known. This is from the Mandukya Upanishad, a favorite in the Vedantic hymnody. The Mandukya is itself attached to the Atharva Veda. It's the shortest of all the Upanishads. It's the one that describes all the states of consciousness, from the waking to the dreaming to the deep sleep and to the Turiya, the fourth state beyond all. This is the seventh verse of those 12. It is interesting because this is an Upanishad which Advaita Vedanta often claims as its own. So this is the foundation. Apart from the Brihadaranyaka, I think probably this is the one that most go to. But look at that last phrase. Sri Aurobindo has translated it here as, that is the self. That is what must be known. It says, Sa Atma. He is the self. Sa Vijnena. He must be known. It is the description of a conscious being, not simply a blank existence, which is the object of knowledge, which is that fourth state beyond all the other three, holding within itself the featureless absolute, conceiving itself in that dream which is then projected into the world's reality. But he, Sa Atma. The next citation is from the Gita. In fact, this is one that's often chanted in India. One sees it as a mystery, Ascharyavat. Or one speaks of it or hears of it as a mystery, but none knows it. You cannot know it as an object. You cannot, from a divided perspective, come to know it. And being finite yourself, you cannot swallow the infinite into your own being. But you can become it, and by being one with it, know it through identity, a different kind of knowledge. We could say it's a knowledge with a capital K, or a gnosis with a capital G. You look at it from a distance, it's like a mirage. It is a mystery. We speak about it, but it is not the wondering about it that leads us there. It is the experience, plunging into it, which is important. That is what saves. That is what illumines. And then another citation from the Gita. This one further on in the 12th chapter. When men seek after the immutable, the indeterminable, the unmanifest, the all-pervading, the unthinkable, the sum itself, the immobile, the permanent, equal in mind to all, intent on the good of all beings, it is to me that they come. Again, not an abstract impersonality, but a conscious being who is guiding you, present in you, with you, and around you as you grow. Immutable, aksharam, indeterminable, anirdeshyam, unmanifest, avyaktam, etc., etc. For the good of all beings, intent on their good, joying in their success, rattaha. And then from the Katha Upanishad, and you may remember, those of you who were with us when we studied the Katha Upanishad, that there is a deep connection between the Katha Upanishad and the Bhagavad Gita, and in the greatening of the formula of what became the full teaching of Vedanta. And it goes all the way back to the Taittiriya Brahmana. But here, this is from the Upanishad itself, from the Katha. High beyond the intelligence, the buddhi, is the great self, Atma Mahan. Beyond the great self is the unmanifest, Avyakta. Beyond the unmanifest is the conscious being, Purusha. There is nothing beyond the being. That is the extreme ultimate, that the supreme goal. So at the crest of our intelligence, at the topmost possibility for the mind, we leave that ratiocination behind and plunge into that great oceanic consciousness of the Atman. But beyond the Atman itself is this greater being, the avyaktam, the unmanifest. And beyond that, which cannot be determined, there is the Purusha. So the Purusha, in a sense, descends through that unmanifest, through the great self, the Atman, through the station of mentality, to proceed into the rest of the universe. So when we are sitting here, standing here, living and moving here within a human body, peering out with a human intelligence and trying to gauge the nature of the world, is it any wonder that we put forward a thesis, cancel it, put forward another thesis, frame a theory, find that the facts don't fit it, reframe, push out another theory, and keep greatening and greatening, but we never get to that. We can't get to that because the mind cannot conceive what that is. And finally, the last citation, again from the Gita. Rare is the great of soul, the Mahatma, to whom all is the divine being. Vasudevaha sarvam iti. When all the shackles of the ignorance fall away, then when you peer out, you see behind every disguise, behind every finite face, that infinite. It is worth a little trouble. It is worth a little practice of yoga. It is worth a little effort at tapasya to arrive at that. And along the way, philosophic questions get burned away as the mist is burned away by the full height of the noonday sun. Now we begin Sri Aurobindo's essay. A consciousness force, everywhere inherent in existence, acting even when concealed, is the creator of the worlds, the occult secret of nature. But in our material world and in our own being, consciousness has a double aspect. There is a force of knowledge, there is a force of ignorance. In the infinite consciousness of a self-aware infinite existence, knowledge must be everywhere implicit or operative in the very grain of its action. But we see here at the beginning of things, apparent as the base or the nature of the creative world energy, and in conscience, a total nescience. So let's remember our terms, a consciousness force, chit shakti, sat chit ananda, remember? Sat being, chit is never just chit, never just consciousness, but always instinct with power, so it is consciousness force, chit shakti. Everywhere, he says, inherent in existence. So there can be no existence without consciousness. And to get straight to the point, consciousness could not come out of a manifesting universe if it were not already involved in it. If consciousness were not part of its nature, it could not emerge. Consciousness as an involved power, present in any formation of existence on whatever level. Sri Aurobindo is aware that we're dealing with the perplexities of the physical world. So he says, but in our material world, consciousness has this double aspect. It is knowledge, it is ignorance. Knowledge fully is the integral awareness of the divine in all of its phases and modalities. Ignorance is when we ignore, when we, as an aspect of the divine consciousness, subject ourselves to a name and a form, to a limitation, to a restriction of power and consciousness, when we divide consciousness from power, when we set being at the background, then we can arrive at a state of ignorance. In the infinite consciousness of a self-aware infinite existence, knowledge must be everywhere, so it is universally present. It is imminent. But we seem to begin from inconscience. What is inconscience? In English, it just means unconsciousness, an absence of awareness, a total nescience. What is nescience? Well, from nescire, to not know. It is ignorance. This is the stock, he says, with which the material universe commences. Consciousness and knowledge emerge at first in obscure infinitesimal movements, at points in little quanta which associate themselves together. There is a tardy and difficult evolution, a slowly increasing organization and ameliorated mechanism of the workings of consciousness. More and more gains are written on the blank slate of the nescience. But still, these have the appearance of gathered acquisitions and constructions of a seeking ignorance which tries to know, to understand, to discover, to change slowly and strugglingly into knowledge. As life here establishes and maintains its operations with difficulty on a foundation and in an environment of general death, first in infinitesimal points of life, in quanta of life form and life energy, in increasing aggregates that create more and more complex organisms, an intricate life machinery, consciousness, also establishes and maintains a growing but precarious light in the darkness of an original nescience and a universal ignorance. So we see a couple of terms here. Infinitesimal means infinitely small. And quanta, from quantus, which means basically how much. It means a something. Some grab of substance is there. So we move in from the tiny to the somewhat, from the somewhat to the larger, trying to assemble an organized understanding of the world. But we begin from this basis of basically nothing, a blank slate. Consciousness begins to rise out of that towards knowledge. Moreover, the knowledge gained is of phenomena, not of the reality of things or of the foundations of existence. So we have described that there is an essential being, sat, which stands behind all things, which stands under all things, in which all things, in a sense, float. We are completely immersed in this essential existence. Being is the basis of all things. But when we start to climb out of what seems to be its opposite, out of nescience, as we go and begin to construct, what we are constructing is a knowledge peering at the phenomena, not at the essence of things, but you might say at the becoming, all the threads that have appeared to form the warp and the woof, as we've seen before, of what is the material of the universe. But that is all phenomenal, not essential. So by describing the phenomena, do we get at the core questions? Wherever our consciousness meets what seems to be a foundation, that foundation wears the appearance of a blank when it is not a void. An original state which is featureless, and a multitude of consequences which are not inherent in the origin, and which nothing in it seems to justify or visibly to necessitate. There is a mass of superstructure which has no clear native relation to the fundamental existence. The first aspect of cosmic existence is an infinite which is to our perception an indeterminate, if not indeterminable. From determinare, to set a boundary. So what is indeterminate is being without a boundary. And it may be that we can't determine whether it has a boundary or not. In that case, it would be an indeterminable. This, of course, could refer back to a refusal to describe a universe which one cannot fully know. It would not be edifying to talk about that. We can't know what is the origin of the cosmos, some philosophies would say. This would be a first look at it, as he describes here. In this infinite, the universe itself, whether in its aspect of energy or its aspect of structure, so aspect of energy, Shakti, or its aspect of structure, its actual being, Sat, appears as an indeterminate determination, a boundless finite, paradoxical but necessary expressions which would seem to indicate that we are face to face with a suprarational mystery as the base of things. In that universe arise, from where? A vast number and variety of general and particular determinates which do not appear to be warranted by anything perceptible in the nature of the infinite, but seem to be imposed, or it may be self-imposed upon it. So a boundless finite. We look at this universe, which seems to be infinite, and this describes our lack of knowledge. We don't know what the scope is, so we can't say. It is, to our capacity to gauge, boundless. Is it a finite? Is it an infinite? We cannot know when we peer at the universe from the standpoint of the ignorance. So, if we can't figure it out rationally, it would seem to be a suprarational mystery. Supra, above, rational, above the mind. It is something that is in a higher consciousness. The mystery is resolvable only when we attain a higher consciousness. But from this infinite, a vast number of determinants come somehow into expression. We don't seem to be able to find a cause for them in the infinite, but here they are. They seem to be imposed or self-imposed upon it. from this suprarational source. The idea of something being imposed leaves us with an echo of the superimposition of the Advaita philosophy, that the universe does not really exist. It is a superimposition upon a static reality that we think this dynamic universe comes into being. So Sri Aurobindo does not treat that, but the fact that he uses the term here seems suggestive. We give to the energy which produces them the name of nature, but the word conveys no meaning unless it is that the nature of things is what it is by virtue of a force which arranges them according to an inherent truth in them. But the nature of that truth itself, the reason why these determinants are what they are, is nowhere visible. And this again is an echo of his own philosophy, drawing some insights from the Veda, because he has said that everything that is an expression in the universe is an expression of a real idea. They contain a truth which wants to give voice to itself in the world. There is that Ritta Chit, that truth consciousness, present in all things as an expression of that suprarational moving here in the finite universe. And these determinants that appear are determinations of that. But we grasp and do not grasp with the mind. It has been possible indeed for human science to detect the process or many processes of material things. But this knowledge does not throw any light on the major question. We do not know even the rationale of the original cosmic processes, for the results do not present themselves as they are necessary, but only their pragmatic and actual consequence. So, cosmogony, the birth of the universe, how does it begin? We don't know. There is, according to Sri Aurobindo, a telos, a design, a purpose at the basis of the cosmos. But as we gather the experience of the universe and try to understand it, we don't see what originates the cosmic processes. There is a purpose in the origination, but we don't grasp it. In the end, he writes, we do not know how these determinants came into or out of the original indeterminate or indeterminable on which they stand forth as on a blank and flat background in the riddle of their ordered occurrence. At the origin of things, we are faced with an infinite containing a mass of unexplained finites, an indivisible full of endless divisions, an immutable, teeming with mutations and differentiae. A cosmic paradox is the beginning of all things, a paradox without any key to its significance. How do we resolve the opposites? How can all of this be true at once? To the mind, they seem contradictory. If there is an infinite being, how does it become finite? How do these clusters of determinations arrive in the universe? If there is an immutable, something that never changes, how does something come into being that constantly changes? Etc. So he continues, it is possible indeed to question the need of positing an infinite which contains our formed universe. Although this conception is imperatively demanded by our mind as a necessary basis to its conceptions, for it is unable to fix or assign a limit, whether in space or time, or essential existence beyond which there is nothing, or before or after which there is nothing, although, too, The alternative is a void or nihil, which can be only an abyss of the infinite into which we refuse to look. An infinite mystic zero of non-existence would replace an infinite X as a necessary postulate, a basis for our seeing of all that is to us existence. Infinite in being, infinite also beyond the power of knowledge. The expanse is immeasurable, and our consciousness psychologically has not the capacity to hold it all, to contain it all. So we are not in a good position with the rational human mind to understand the ultimate questions of where the universe comes from and why it is. And of course, this is interesting. The alternative, a void or nihil, which can only be an abyss of the infinite, or an infinite mystic zero of non-existence. These alternatives present themselves as rational options, but with either, we can't get to fathom with our minds what is the secret of that. Is it a shunya? Is it a void? Or is it an absolute of being, sat? Whatever the question, the mind can't deliver an answer. But even if we refuse to recognize anything as real, except the limitless expanding finite of the material universe and its teeming determinations, the enigma remains the same. Infinite existence, infinite non-being, or boundless finite, all are to us original indeterminates or indeterminables. We can assign to them no distinct characters or features, nothing which would predetermine their determinations. To describe the fundamental character of the universe as space or time or space-time does not help us. For even if these are not abstractions of our intelligence, which we impose by our mental view on the cosmos, the mind's necessary perspective of its picture, these too are indeterminates and carry in themselves no clue to the origin of the determinations which take place in them. There is still no explanation of the strange process by which things are determined, or of their powers, qualities, and properties, no revelation of their true nature, origin, and significance. Actually, to our science, this infinite or indeterminate existence reveals itself as an energy, known not by itself, but by its works, which throws up in its motion waves of energism, and in them a multitude of infinitesimals, infinitely small, waves and particles. These, grouping themselves to form larger infinitesimals, become a basis for all the creations of the energy, even those farthest away from the material basis, for the emergence of a world of organized matter, for the emergence of life, for the emergence of consciousness, for all the still unexplained activities of evolutionary nature. On the original process are erected a multitude of processes which we can observe, follow, can take advantage of many of them, utilize, but they are none of them fundamentally explicable. We know now that different groupings and a varying number of electric infinitesimals can produce or serve as the constituent occasion, miscalled the cause, for here there seems to be only a necessary antecedent condition for the appearance of larger atomic infinitesimals of different natures, qualities, powers. but we fail to discover how these different dispositions can come to constitute these different atoms, how the differentiae in the constituent occasion or cause necessitate the differentiae in the constituted outcome or result. Well, this is an argument that goes on, but essentially the problem here is that we are describing and not defining. We are painting a picture of the process, but not getting to the raison d'etre behind. We are not fundamentally answering the question. We are on the surface, we are not in the depths. We're following the becoming, we're not in the essence. It's only when we grasp the essence or somehow know that, quotes, that these larger questions become penetrable to us. Otherwise, we remain on the surface, in the superficies, and don't attain to the penetralia. He continues, we know also that certain combinations of certain invisible atomic infinitesimals produce or occasion new and visible determinations quite different in nature, quality, and power from the constituent infinitesimals. But we fail to discover, for instance, how a fixed formula for the combination of oxygen and hydrogen comes to determine the appearance of water, which is evidently something more than a combination of gases. A new creation, a new form of substance, a material manifestation of a quite new character. So what we can do is describe chemically how these things come into atomic connection, form molecules, etc., etc. But again, it's a description. We're drawing a picture. This is not knowledge. This is replicating, building a miniature model of what we see in front of us. And always that model seems to be displaced by a new and better model. So we're not answering the fundamentals, and this is Sri Aurobindo's point. We could go on. He's here speaking in general terms about the formation of the physical universe, but we've gone beyond the questions of atoms and molecules now, and we are into subatomic particles and digging deeper and deeper towards what must be the inconscient beginnings of all things. Can we, in fact, describe that scientifically? Will we ever reach that? And if we have trouble going beyond that transversal line which separates the suprarational from the rational, can we penetrate that transversal line which separates the material from the inconscient? These are large questions indeed. Let's go a few sentences more. We see that a seed develops into a tree. We follow the line of the process of production, and we utilize it. But we do not discover how a tree can grow out of a seed, how the life and form of the tree come to be implied in the substance or energy of the seed, or if that be rather the fact, how the seed can develop into a tree. We know that genes and chromosomes are the cause of hereditary transmissions, not only of physical, but of psychological variations. But we do not discover how psychological characteristics can be contained and transmitted in this inconscient material vehicle. We do not see or know, but it is expounded to us as a cogent account of nature process that a play of electrons, of atoms and their resultant molecules, of cells, glands, chemical secretions, and physiological processes manages by their activity on the nerves and brain of a Shakespeare or a Plato to produce, or could be perhaps, the dynamic occasion for the production of a Hamlet or a symposium or a republic. But we fail to discover or appreciate how such material movements could have composed or necessitated the composition of these highest points of thought and literature. The divergence here of the determinants and the determination becomes so wide that we are no longer able to follow the process, much less understand or utilize. These formulae of science may be pragmatically correct and infallible. They may govern the practical how of nature's processes, but they do not disclose the intrinsic how or why. Rather, they have the air of the formulae of a cosmic magician. Precise, irresistible, automatically successful, each in its field. But their rationale is fundamentally unintelligible. And again, this comes back to Sri Aurobindo's point that there is behind and above a telos, a design and purpose, unknown to the mind, undiscoverable in the play of the ignorance, but present nonetheless. So what do we do about these indeterminates and cosmic determinations? We'll go farther next time. I think we've come a healthy distance this evening. And I think we'll go into Savitri also and read a section. This is in Book 3, the Book of the Divine Mother, the House of the Spirit and the New Creation. Alien now seemed that dim, far universe. Self and eternity alone were true. Then memory climbed to him from the striving plains, bringing a cry from once loved, cherished things. And to the cry, as to its own lost call, a ray replied from the occult supreme. For even there the boundless oneness dwells. To its own sight unrecognizable, it lived still sunk in its own tenebrous seas, upholding the world's inconscient unity, hidden in matter's insentient multitude. This seed self, sown in the indeterminate, forfeits its glory of divinity, concealing the omnipotence of its force, concealing the omniscience of its soul. An agent of its own transcendent will, it merges knowledge in the inconscient deep, accepting error, sorrow, death, and pain. It pays the ransom of the ignorant night, redeeming by its substance nature's fall. Himself he knew, and why his soul had gone into earth's passionate obscurity, to share the labor of an errant power, which by division hopes to find the one. Namaste. Jai Ma.